At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with a sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for the 1st of October 2024. I am joined by Carl and Beau.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the hurricane that has struck the United States. Beau's going to be talking about something that's going to get us all blown up. And Carl's going to get us going to be talking about something that's going to get us demonetized. Although it's not going on YouTube. Oh.
And we're already demonetized on YouTube.
So it doesn't.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But no, Carl's talking about the election coming up in the United States.
Yeah, they're going to steal it. They're going to try and steal it again. Mm-hmm. It's just
breaking news. I think it's going to be a new method this time, though. But I'm not going to spoil it.
Well, it's Save lots it of different segment. Methods, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, there is a roundtable at 3 o'clock today. So after this podcast, a half an hour afterwards, we're talking about the Conservatives outflanking Reform to the right because they've realised that Reform are a threat. And all of a sudden, they've discovered their set of testicles. And I don't hold out any hopes for any of them, but we're going to be talking about it. I think it'll be an interesting conversation for the future of British politics, at the very least.
It simply shouldn't be possible, but here we are. The Conservatives are far to the right of Nigel Farage at this point, which shows us just how duplicitous the Conservatives are and how disappointing Reform are.
So. Absolutely. So, as probably most Americans are aware now, there was a hurricane in the United States, Hurricane Helene, and it hit late on Thursday night with a maximum sustained wind of 140 miles per hour, obviously very high, and it pretty much weakened to a tropical storm once it hit land, as you can see in this sort of diagram of the storm itself. You can see there, by the time it got to sort of northern Georgia, it had become a tropical storm rather than a hurricane, but for a decent portion of land, it was a hurricane. So it caused lots of storm surge damage, flooding, obviously, as well as extensive wind damage. Apparently, there was up to 20 feet of storm surge in some places, which is completely unsurvivable if you're, you know, staying in your house, which is terrifying to me.
So for a layman, what's storm surge mean?
So when there is a storm, you get surging waves from the sea. 20 feet. So
massive waves are...
Pretty much. Well, it's just the water shifting in. You see video clips of it, and it just looks like the sea is just moving into the land. It's really horrifying, actually. And there's also up to 20 inches of rainfall in some areas, which obviously caused flash floods, and also landslides in more mountainous areas. I'm going to be looking at some of those. So far, I was able to find 132 deaths across multiple states, but the states affected are Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia.
So I'm hearing a lot of Republican voting states there.
Yes, that's right. Interesting. We'll be getting back to that.
Yeah.
But what I do need is that copy of Islander right there. Okay. So if you're hiding away from extreme weather events, extreme migrant events, extreme extremities of any kind, and you need some reading material, what you want...
Roaming gangs of immigrants.
That too, yeah. You need a copy of Islander. There's lots of interesting things to read about in here that will fascinate you and distract you from your impending doom. And there are lots of good articles. There's one here by Carl. There's also one by Stefan Molyneux. Even I'm in here. So make sure to get... That's true, yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I've lost my flow now, but yeah,
Islander, make sure to buy Islander.
It. Yeah, buy it.
Really good. You'll like it.
It's only going to be there for a little while, and then it's going to be out of print, and then you won't be able to buy it. But anyway, on to some of the destruction caused by this hurricane. So here is aerial footage of Asheville, North Carolina.
Jesus.
This, obviously, very high flood water.
Not the Wendy's.
We're not happy with that, Mike.
Nope.
Be sneaky, help.
You guys didn't notice anything?
Bit of studio trickery there.
That was flawless.
You cut to Josh.
Okay.
But as you can see,
yeah,
massive flooding.
This
looked horrifying. Yeah. I would dread to think what it was like to actually be there. There's some more here. This is Asheville as well. And you can see the aftermath slightly later. Just the
Jesus Christ.
Damage done here.
Because in Britain, it's a particularly clement place, yeah. Right? We're not on any fault lines. We don't get, other than once a generation, if that, a hurricane. It's not even as bad as this.
I've never seen anything like this.
So, we don't have any massive predators. The worst you've got is like a badger.
I've been chased by a badger.
Hardly any poisonous things. You might once in a blue moon see an adder, maybe once in your life.
England is like a garden.
Yeah. So to Brits, this is just sort of crazy, this sort of stuff, when it happens fairly regularly, it seems to me, in America, right?
I mean, well, America's a giant continent.
It does amaze me that people take it in their stride. The same with tornadoes and things like that. They're just like, yeah, it could happen. I'm just like, does that not worry you a bit more? Yeah. It'd worry me a lot. But here's some more. This is Black Mountain, North Carolina here. I think this is some drone footage just of the extent of the flooding. It seems to be almost centralized around the town itself as well there, which is horrifying. And
well, quite often settlements, towns are built on by rivers, right? Mm-hmm. So if a river bursts its banks.
Yeah, exactly. This is some more aftermath. This is again North Carolina, but you're starting to get the gist of it.
It's crazy.
Here's some more. I think this is actually a lake here. But
this just seems like a colossal mass, just colossal disaster. Just you'd think that this would warrant a full-scale mobilisation from the federal government.
You would think that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So another thing.
Why would they talk about anything else other than this?
Cutting to Florida as well. Here we have a Tesla catching fire when the garage floods. And supposedly this is something that can happen. So I wanted to include this because it's not particularly intuitive that electric cars catch fire when you put water on them. But apparently they do. Apparently it's salt water in particular.
Well, there's a reason that you don't put water on electrics.
Yes. But I wanted to include this just so people are aware that if you've got an electric car and it comes into contact with salt water, it can catch fire. So another thing in Florida, they seem to be a bit more adapted to dealing with it because people are going for a jog drinking beer by the looks of it.
Florida man.
He's struck once again.
I do feel like one of the best ways to deal with it is to do the is it Captain Dan in Forrest Gump?
Lieutenant Dan.
Like just waving his fist at God. Is that the best you've got? Bring it on. I know it's easy for me to say.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be risking
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no.
So in perhaps a more stark image here, this is Florida again.
Well, this is lives ruined.
Of course, yeah, this is
thousands of lives.
You can see the foundations where houses once were, and also the people who are probably in them horrified. Some of them might not have even survived.
Well, I mean, it's surprising so few have died
yeah.
when you look at that.
Mm.
Right. Was it 138 dead, did you say?
132 so far. 132. At least that's still the number that I've been able to get. And moving on to... Cheers, Samson. Moving on to Tennessee here, I'm going to play some audio of this. This is an entire bridge collapsing because of the flooding. Sorry if it's a bit loud.
Get out of the way.
I'll turn it down.
Bro, get out of the way.
Mother Nature doesn't care about your bridge.
It's just untold destruction, isn't it? And I'm going to show just a couple more things. I think there's only just one more, in fact. And this is one of the scariest ones to me. was this. This is just a sudden debris flow from what looks like a mountainous area. It says East Tennessee, Western North Carolina. The volume because it'd be loud, but just a sudden...
They narrowly escaped death.
They did, yeah.
That's a landslide, right? If you're watching us and you're in these regions,
I hope you're safe.
Yeah, I hope everything's all right.
Yeah, but
it's crazy.
I've always said it's a very, very glib thing to say, but if I lived in a danger zone, I would think about moving. Yeah. If I lived in Hurricane Alley, I would think about going somewhere else. So even in California, in the earthquake zones, I would think about maybe living somewhere else.
In 2018, I think it was 2017, I went to California and I was having dinner with Michael Knowles. And everything started shaking.
Really?
And they were just like, should be fine. And they looked terrified. Because it could be at any time there's a gargantuan earthquake and everyone dies.
I think they're overdue one, right?
Yeah, they are, yeah. Oof. Oh. So it's just like, okay.
Yeah, it's difficult to fathom if you live in Europe, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
So another natural hazard. I've covered landslides, floods, you know, the storm winds, all sorts of things. Mexican migrants as well, apparently looting Mexican migrants. Here are some people that have been arrested here. And yes, there are roving bands of people trying to basically steal whilst everyone is away from their properties. And of course, this sort of thing happened in Katrina as well. It seems to be unfortunately very common, but it's something to consider as well.
It's sort of human nature. I think during the Black Death, when sometimes whole villages were wiped out, people would come in and loot the empty properties. Or even during the Blitz, crime went up massively during the Blitz.
Really?
Yeah, loads of people down in the air raid shelters and thieves, cat thieves or whatever, go around breaking and entering, stealing stuff. It's just great. Some people have got no scruples, right?
Mm-hmm. But as Carl foreshadowed earlier, the yellow is the path of the hurricane and tropical storm. And here, this is mapped over the voting. And you can see red, obviously, Republican, blue, Democrat. And you can see which areas are affected here. And it is largely, but not entirely, Republican areas, which, you know, considering the nature of, you know, they're largely centered around these sorts of areas, and these areas expect hurricanes and tropical storms, it's somewhat to be expected. But the response is the thing I want to highlight, because I don't agree with things like this, where there are... silly people saying, oh, it was the government controlling hurricanes. It's just absurd. Just like, do you really think that that's something that's tangible or that you could get away with potentially?
Did we get many God people this time saying it's God's vengeance for sodomy and stuff? They always come out, one or two of those come out of the woodwork usually when this happens.
Yeah, innocent people. I think it's a tough sell, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
But yeah, this stuff, not helpful. But Trump has spoke about this, and what he said was interesting, because he said, obviously, I don't want to turn a hurricane political, but, and then and said some political stuff. So he claimed that the Biden administration was refusing to help Republican governors, and he cited Governor Brian Kemp, who I think he's the governor of Georgia, who claimed that he did speak repeatedly to both Kamala and Biden. And he's a Republican governor saying, actually, this wasn't
yeah,
true.
They have. He's a suspect property.
He is, yes. But I think that there is an aspect of the hurricane that is political.
Why isn't this full mobilization? What's the US military doing?
Yes. Like, we'll be looking at why there hasn't been much of a good federal response very soon. Yeah. But what I did want to point out is that the Democrats can't complain because, as Orrin McIntyre here points out, that they ran on the George Bush hates black people because Katrina.
I was just going to say exactly, make a very, very similar point to that, mm-hmm. that from the political side of things, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Because if you don't go there, like George Bush sort of didn't go to the site of Katrina, at least for quite a while. And people said, you don't care. It's like the Queen not saying anything about Diana's death. It's like, you don't care, you're cold. But if you do go, if you do talk about it straight away, then you're politicising the tragedy. So it's a bit of a tightrope politically, but...
Mm-hmm.
Just physically help the people, though. Yeah, surely that.
Morally, send men, supplies, resources, money, whatever it is that is required to save lives and rebuild these communities. I mean, it's really not very complex. And you think that'd be one of the primary things the government ought to be doing during a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm. But because, of course, there exists the organisation FEMA, which is meant to assist when there is a natural disaster. And this is goal one of what FEMA does on their website. Here you can see, instill equity as a foundation of emergency management. This is goal number one. It's not help people in need. It's not, you know, make sure people are safe. It is instill equity.
Pretty sure they have stockpiled vast numbers of coffins, though, so...
Oh, well, that's...
Not seen the FEMA stockpile of coffins?
I have.
They've got that covered.
Many conspiracy theories.
Got that covered, mm-hmm. at least.
So... It's also worth mentioning as well that FEMA has been transformed from a disaster relief agency into an illegal alien resettlement agency. So here is an extract from their website. The program may also receive funding to award to the National Board for distribution to local social service organizations that provide humanitarian relief to families and individuals encountered by the Department of Homeland Security. And why would they be encountered by the Department of Homeland Security? Because they're breaking into the country illegally. That is why. It's pretty explicit.
So have FEMA, like, said what they're doing about this hurricane?
I've not seen much about it, to be honest. You'd think that they would be front and centre, wouldn't
you? Yeah, it'd be the only thing they'd be tweeting about, the only thing they'd post on their website. Mm.
It may well have happened, but to a lesser scale than you would want. So it's also worth mentioning as well that over $1 billion in taxpayer money has been allocated to this migrant service rather than the disaster relief. And here they're giving money to New York, of course, not subject to, say, hurricane disasters. And of course, New York is known for handing out gift cards and hotels to illegal immigrants, and they're currently suffering with it. And there are other schemes as well, this one for $685 million for more funding for illegal aliens. So this is almost approaching $2 billion in money. And yeah, they've got the equity page as well, as well as many other things. But you get the idea that the agency is not fit for purpose anymore because it's been repurposed for something else. It should be for disaster relief. Instead, it's helping with the migrant situation, which shouldn't be a situation in the first place, obviously. And let's cut to this as well. FEMA's also saying that it's due to global heating. It's not even warming anymore, it's heating. They've changed the language for whatever reason. So they won't save you, but they will propagandize you.
Let's assume it is. Get down there and help people out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't
just
excuse
assume it's
you.
Correct. Yeah, sure. Get on with it.
Mm-hmm. So here is Kamala Harris talking about this sort of thing.
It is our lowest income communities and our communities of color that are most impacted by these extreme conditions and impacted by issues that are not of their own making.
And
so
women.
Absolutely. And so we have to address this in a way that is about giving resources based on equity, understanding that we fight for equality, but we also need to fight for equity, understanding not everyone starts out at the same place. And if we want people to be in an equal place, sometimes we have to take into account those disparities and do that work.
Yeah, okay. Imagine clapping that.
But, I mean, this is where it's really showing that. Because you had a lot of people saying, well, hang on a second, who's in charge of the United States if Biden is basically out to lunch? And for most of the time, it doesn't really matter because the institutions, the civil service, whatever it is, everything kind of runs itself. But it's in emergency situations like this where it really does matter because a responsible president will come out and say, right, okay, I've spoken to Congress, spoken to the Senate, we've secured however many billions in emergency funding, we're going to get emergency works over there, we're going to make sure there's relief packages for the people who have lost their livelihoods, their homes, blah, blah, blah. We're going to make sure the lives are saved and things are fixed. And at the moment, it just seems like crickets because I've heard nothing from Biden on this. Mm. The media gives it very little coverage.
Well, here's what Biden had to say. I'm just going to summarize because we're running out of time. But journalist asks, do you have any words for the victims of the hurricane? And he basically says, we've given them all that we have. Are there any more resources that the federal government could be giving them? And he says, no. And then shall we cut to 3 days earlier, he gave $2.4 billion of aid to Ukraine.
As if
where did that money come from?
Oh, sorry, no, I need to be fiscally responsible. Oh, yeah, like when? When has the US government been fiscally responsible? 1872 or something, right? Like, so it just... Okay, yeah, can't increase the debt anymore. God.
So Republicans have also been pointing out that he was claiming that he was commanding the situation whilst it was ongoing, and they're alleging that he was at his beach house and Kamala was fundraising in San Francisco. So neither of them were at the helm sorting things out.
Yeah.
Which I can believe. Yeah, it seems perfectly reasonable to me. And to sort of flip it on its head and show how effective a response can be, I'm going to go to how DeSantis dealt with it in Florida, because if anyone's prepared for hurricanes, it is the Floridians, and especially DeSantis. So here is a video. These are all linesmen in one place waiting to go out and repair all of the lines that are downed. It's a massive fleet of them. And you can see here that DeSantis, as time was going on, was posting updates. So this is basically one full day after the actual hurricane itself. They'd already restored 2.175 million homes with power. And then there were only 227,000 outstanding. And then he kept on posting updates. So by this point, basically a day and a bit more, 99% of the state had power, which is very impressive.
It's like he's got the best interests of Florida at heart, isn't it? It's almost as though...
I don't mean to laugh, but it's just funny to frame it that way. It's like, wow, it's almost like he cares about his state.
Yeah, it is.
That
response from Biden was horrible.
It's disgusting. It's absolutely despicable.
And then... the final thing I wanted to end on is that even though Florida, you know, dealt with the hurricane at its worst, they actually sent their National Guard to send air assets to North Carolina to help them.
See, this is what the president should be doing. Mm-hmm. This is responsible governance.
It is, yeah. And also, this is one of the things that even just in a disaster situation individually, if you are prepared yourself, it's not only good for you, it's good for everyone around you, because you can offer help to them. And that is the whole point of these things existing. And if you politicize them, they cease to work. Okay.
So there's some chats.
We do, oh yeah.
There is. Mason Roy says, keep the beard, Bert. Looks good.
Thank you.
There you are. Thank you. Here's your copy of Islander. There you are.
Still can't grow sideburns, though.
No.
Not really, anyway.
They're sort of coming in, though, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't bother because they're patchy.
Apache Bow, yeah.
I've had a
my debut album, Apache Sideburns.
I've had a completely full beard since I was 19. I don't understand the really? Boy problems. don't know what to tell you.
I sort of get the Chinese growth. Yeah, where it grows really quickly here and then slowly fills in on the sides. Oh, well.
Okay, can I get control of...
We've got a quick chat here. Migrants looting during a natural disaster. Turns out they are willing to adopt American culture. Oh dear, yes.
Right, so we need to talk a little bit about Israel and Hezbollah. We haven't talked about that theatre of conflict for quite a while.
I know, I try to avoid it.
Yeah. It is always a bit of a minefield, because one of the first things to say is that whenever we, for example, express any sort of criticism of the Zelensky government, some people accuse us of being pro-Putin, pro-Russia, pro-Kremlin.
Yeah.
It's just not the case. Some cretins have even accused us of actually being in the pay of Russia, things like that. Nonsense. So, the first thing to say about this, my own position anyway, is that I'm neither for Israel nor the Arabs. I'm an Englishman, thank you very much. We haven't got a dog in the fight, nor should we. I won't pick a side. I refuse to pick a side. I don't accept that paradigm. But a lot of people do, isn't it? I think it's a pitfall a lot of people fall into, where you're so anti-Islam, for example, that you effectively become pro-Israeli, like Douglas Murray, say, for example. Or the other way around. You're so anti-Israel that you effectively pro-Muslim like Jeremy Corbyn or George Galloway or something.
Jackson Hinkle.
Right. Yeah. Lots of people, I think, fall into that pitfall.
Yeah.
And I refuse to do that. No.
Fair, this has been particularly rough on Jeremy Corbyn, hasn't it?
He's lost a lot of friends.
His pager blew up. No, I'm joking. Sorry, I've been preparing that joke for ages.
My concern about picking sides, if you will, is that it then provides a rationale for military adventurism, doesn't it? And if we can see the story of, you know, when the UK and the US go out to particularly the Middle East, it doesn't end well for us.
It's not in our interest, is it, either way?
It's not our problem to solve. We're not the world police.
Yeah. I mean, some people say that Israel are our closest ally in the region. Are they, though? What have they done for us lately?
I mean, probably technically true, but...
But I just want to pick a side. I take the Magna Carta over either the Talmud or the Quran, thank you very much.
Yeah, but I just look at them as just... They're just foreign countries. They're just foreign countries a long way off.
Sure, yeah.
With me.
Mm-hmm. It's an endless, disgusting desert feud. It's got nothing to do with England. So there you go. Yeah, we shouldn't be funding them. See, when you make say an opinion like that, you say we shouldn't be funding them. Oh, so you're pro Arab, are you? You know, no.
We're not even funding them. I mean, I think Starmer stopped even the private sales of arms.
No, it was a partial.
Arms
ban.
Like, so the other day I saw on Question Time that Zia Yusuf fella.
Yeah.
Talking about how we shouldn't stop arms sales to Israel because then we wouldn't have any influence with the Netanyahu government.
We have influence with Netanyahu.
Right, yeah. Are you mad?
What was the response he made to Lamy the other day? As much as I hate to say, well, look, you were supposed to go meet with David Lamy. He was like, no.
Netanyahu doesn't give a fig what our Foreign and Commonwealth Office say.
He doesn't take David Lamy very seriously.
But put it on its head, if it was the other way around, if the Scots were occupying Newcastle...
they have done previously.
Or the Welsh would be sieging Bristol or something.
I don't think they've done.
Let them have that. Yeah.
Or Exeter.
Better.
I would not be listening to Netanyahu saying, you must stop the violence. I'd be like, no, be quiet. This is our problem.
We've got a few Scottish cities to bomb.
Yeah.
That's going to be taken out of context.
Just got on Nick Glasgow real quick. That's a great little clip for Hope Not Hate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, let's see if that context is a bit.
I like Scotland, by the way.
Yeah, I like Scotland. Scots people, the reason why I didn't get in any real trouble for my Scottish things, because nearly all Scots have got a sense of humour.
Yeah, they do.
Haven't they? It's rare to find a Scots person that can't laugh at themselves and Britain and everything.
And somehow they become leaders of the SNP.
Oh, yeah, the odd humorous one.
They make fail it to upwards.
The yeah, they do. I don't understand. Anyway.
So, yeah, we're not funded by Jerusalem or Moscow. We are, in fact, funded by our brilliant... Or Iran, nor even Tehran.
Yeah. Right. We're actually funded by our subscribers.
Or Zimbabwe. Our subscribers. Just throwing that one out there.
Yeah, and the odd super chat and the odd bit of merch. And Islander magazine. See how seamless that was, Carl?
That was it.
Professional.
Very good.
By Islander magazine, it's brilliant. It's got loads of people in it. It's got Mr. Carl Benjamin, whoever he is, is published in it. We've got Morgoth, great Morgoth, Dr. Parvini, Dave Green, Stefan Molyneux. It's good stuff. It is really worth... buying, I think. So do consider purchasing this. Oh, and Big Josh Firm as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've heard of him.
Best or last.
Off Lotus Eaters. That Josh Firm off Lotus
Eaters. I hate that guy. What a scumbag.
Okay, back to the interminable conflict between Israel and all their Arab neighbours. So, just this morning, I believe it was, or overnight, Israel have done some sort of incursion into southern Lebanon. Again, I say again because when you look back at the history of it, this happened many, many, many times. This isn't new. So one of the things I want to do in this segment is kind of talk to people that might not have all that lot, younger people who might not remember or won't remember the early 2000s or even the 80s or even the 70s. I wasn't alive in the 70s. So there's a ground invasion into southern Lebanon. Lebanon is directly above Israel on the map. So where to begin? You could go back to the very early 20th century, World War One. Could talk a bit about Lawrence of Arabia and things, but I won't. Well, let's start at the Yom Kippur War, 1973. Mm-hmm. So that was when Israel had all sorts of wars with all their neighbours, sort of thing.
Well, weren't the Arabs in a giant coalition and they thought, we'll invade on Yom Kippur
because the
Israelis won't be at their ready. This will be when they're on some sort of Israeli Jewish holy day. I don't know anything about it. Really.
Public holiday, yeah.
Public holiday, and they'll all be chilling out, drinking wine or whatever.
We'll catch them unawares. Actually, ever so slight, just a side note, I didn't think I'd be talking about this, but actually backfired a bit because although for the first few minutes people were like, you know, it's like a Sunday, like we're not ready for business.
Yeah.
The fact was all the streets and roads were empty, so they could move assets around easier than any other day, so that backfired a bit on the Arabs. Anyway, during that time, they had to have a bit of a war with Lebanon in the Yom Kippur War. But it's sort of never ending. It's sort of ongoing. I mean, they had to do an incursion in the late 70s, 1978. They bounced across the border into Lebanon because Lebanon's having long wars. You remember Beirut being a byword for urban conflict when we were young, right?
Well, yeah, but that's because the Muslims were trying to take over a Christian country, which they did. And for some reason, we let it happen.
Well, in 1982, the Israelis had enough of it. And they went all the way to Beirut, briefly. They had enough of it in 1982. So by sort of 1999, the year 2000, the Israelis had put in a security barrier. What did they call it? The Israeli security zone. Is that what it was called? Basically, a big chunk of southern Lebanon, like 10% of all Lebanon, was just like this demilitarized zone imposed by the Israelis. Because they just kept firing, the PLO and Hezbollah just kept firing stuff into Israel. In fact, in the 82 incursion, that was to get the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. So they were, even though they're obviously the PLO Palestinians, they were of course using Lebanon as a base. Back then they would use Syria and Jordan. Jordan had enough of it after a while, just refused to have anything to do with the PLO. Anyway, that's Yasser Arafat. That's yesteryear. Don't need to worry about that too much. But nowadays, of course, Hezbollah is completely backed by Iran. So it's a much bigger conflict. It's a more deadly conflict in a way, or at least potentially. Because that is the big worry in all of this, to cut to the chase. The big, big worry is that ultimately there's a massive conflagration between, well, the US and Iran, and then, you know, who knows what.
Yeah, I mean, like you said at the beginning, I'm not a supporter of Israel or Hezbollah, but Hezbollah definitely have provoked this, and you know, at the end of the day, you've been provoking this for decades, and now Israel seems to just be taking the gloves off, and it's like, well,
yeah,
what did you expect? You know,
yeah, I shouldn't have to keep repeating myself saying I'm not pro-Israel, but it's a maxim of war. Don't take on someone that's vastly superior to you.
Yeah, and if you
I'm talking to Hezbollah, you drop the ball there,
Hamas
and Hamas.
But it's like, and if you do, and they retaliate in ways you can't resist, well, then what did you think was going to happen?
But have you considered that Allah is on their side?
Oh right, yeah, there is that. Yeah, of course. But you know, it's an old thing from Sun Tzu to Machiavelli to von Clausewitz.
Any military tactician in the last 4,000 years.
Yeah. If you've got an enemy that is vastly superior to you, technically, probably best not to take them on in a show of arms. Because if they decide they want to annihilate you, well, anyway, old Netty in Jerusalem has obviously decided, yeah, the gloves are off, right? So in the last month or more, they have just assassinated, just killed most of the structure. The
entire top brass of Hezbollah.
The leadership, including the actual leader.
And this is the thing, I don't respect the crocodile tears from the leftist, third worldist types who are like, oh no, they've killed a bunch of terrorists. It's like, sorry, Hamas and Hezbollah were terrorists. They've been terrorists for years. They've, you know, they kill civilians, that's what they do, and they're trying to overthrow Israel. And it's like, okay, fair enough, that's what they're doing. I'm not going to weep for them now that Israel's just wiped a bunch of them out.
Yeah, so on there you can see the extent of it. So if we actually could go back to the other link and actually play, it's just about 2 minutes long. That one, can we play this? We don't even need to.
Hezbollah has suffered a string of blows to its command structure over the last fortnight, culminating in the killing of its elusive leader Hassan Nasrallah on Friday. So how did the Israel Defense Forces manage to track him down, and how have they been able to target so many of Hezbollah's top commanders? Well, our security correspondent Frank Gardner has been looking into it. Frank.
Well, targeting the Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah was a strategic decision by Israel. In hiding for years, he'd long been in Israel's sights. So, how did they do it? Israeli intelligence was already widely assumed to be behind the lethal sabotage of all those thousands of Hezbollah's pagers and walkie-talkies. The Mossad, that's Israel's overseas spy agency, is thought to have inserted explosives into the supply chain. Now, that was almost a fortnight ago. What's transpired since then is that Israel's penetration of the Hezbollah command structure goes deeper still. Just have a look at this pyramid here. The Israeli military says that it has assassinated all of these senior Hezbollah commanders. So just how has this Israeli campaign been able to penetrate Hezbollah's security so comprehensively?
It certainly looks like something that would have been put together over probably years. It would have been built up from...
We get it. Mossad are sort of...
You've got to give them credit.
Masters of what
they
do.
Clearly the best at what they do.
So if I could just quickly click on that. Well, mouse isn't working. On the one that I said structure eliminated. Again, look at that pyramid. Yeah, so there's a guy directly under there, Fawad Shakur. So they got him, I think, at the end of July, and what they were able to do was just tap into his smartphone and or his laptop or whatever and just know exactly where he was on the top floor of a particular building, right. Drop a JDAM or some sort of intelligent munition through that and blow it up, kill him. So from there, Hezbollah obviously realised that all their devices were compromised. So that's why they went back to low-tech stuff. I did think to myself, who uses pagers anymore?
Well, people who don't want to get blown up by Israel.
Right. Yeah. So that's a moment in time. It's like the early 90s was pagers, yeah. Right? Like 1992, people had pagers. Who has pagers these days? Anyway, well, it's because all their smartphones and stuff was compromised. So they went back to using walkie-talkies and even pagers. And they went to buy them from a company in Hungary, I believe. And Hungary was actually sourcing them originally from Taiwan.
Right.
And so somehow Mossad got wind of all this.
Right.
And intercepted the shipment of these things from Taiwan to Hungary, replaced loads of batteries with little 20-gram bits of explosive, then let them go on to Hungary, and then Hungary sell them to Hezbollah in Lebanon. And then when they're ready, they... play that clip, actually, Samson. It's not too graphic, but it is... There's loads of clips like this where you can see people getting anyway, that's enough. You don't need to see any more. It's just there's no more. Yeah, they did that. So it just seems that in the Israeli cabinet, they've decided we're going to do whatever it takes, whatever we need to do. Because also the Hamas leadership has been sort of terribly destroyed and killed as well, haven't they? So on the Douglas Murray did it. I mentioned Douglas Murray earlier, didn't I? Being sort of so anti-Islam that he's almost pro Israel, but it's still quite funny. For him to dig it. I had this debate with someone on Twitter, someone who I like, so it's no dig at them. And they were saying it's weird for us to revel in Israeli wins in any way, because the Israelis aren't our allies or anything. And I get the point, I understand their point. But, you know, seeing militant Islamists get their comeuppance...
Yeah, I mean,
puts a smile on my face.
These aren't good people.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You don't have to agree the Israelis are good people
either. Right. It's not a zero-sum game.
No, it's not.
I've got enough enmity in my heart for both sides. thank you very much. Yeah, no, I'm an Englishman with an RAF-themed tie, Celtic-themed cufflinks. Mm-hmm. I don't pick a side. But yeah, it's still funny for Douglas Murray to sort of dig at Jeremy Corbyn and George Galloway. I mean, George Galloway was literally
he's got me blocked. I can't see what he's saying, but I can imagine he's weeping.
Yeah. Well, Corbyn's got you blocked.
No, Galloway.
All right, okay.
I've never even tweeted him.
He was literally friends with Hamas leadership.
Yeah, I know.
Met with Hezbollah and stuff. So
as bad as Jeremy Corbyn, if not worse.
So yeah. All right, so it comes down then to just if you could, Samson, just click through those various links relatively quickly. Just what the mainstream media is saying. You know, BBC News has obviously got almost a minute-by-minute feed. You know, this is the news. War, happy now.
Yeah, I mean, the media loves the clicks.
Yeah.
Nice brass I referenced there.
Cheers. So the overall thing to say about it, really, is that there's no end in sight. It's an endless sort of desert feud, racial, religious, and over land, quite literally.
Oh, that's all until, due to the Middle East, isn't it? Mm. My goodness.
Until Iran and their terrorist proxies give up the hope of defeating Israel, or Israel give up the hope of there being an Israel, it will never end. And neither of those things will happen, or extremely unlikely to happen. Right?
Yeah, I don't see an end in sight.
It's an immovable object. Versus an unstoppable force. Neither side sort of can give in, right? Neither side particularly see it in their interest to even come to the table. Well,
I would hazard that the Islamic regime in Iran is more likely to collapse before they defeat Israel. So, you know,
I would say the same, to be honest. Yeah.
I think it's entirely possible that in the next like 20 years or something, the mullahs get overthrown and the money dries up. And so it could well be that it does come to an end, but it's not going to be willingly.
Yeah, right. And of course, we all know that the US, even under Trump, is entirely in Israel's column on this.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, Trump's got a real, almost a personal boggle with Tehran, hasn't he?
Yeah.
They're trying to assassinate him, and he strikes their guys when he was in power and stuff.
Yeah, true. Trump seems to make everything personal, as you say.
I mean, if we remember the Qasem Soleimani assassination, that was Trump dropping smart munitions on one of their leading militarists and blowing him to bits. So Trump's prepared to pull the trigger on stuff. Completely. Absolutely. Yeah. He's got no problem with that.
Unlike the Obama administration, who was like, why don't we just give them loads of money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although Obama was not shy in bombing countries, to be
fair. No, but with the Iranians in particular, he's like, we need to give them money.
Then he very strange, them. Isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's
a country that's actively hostile to us. Let's
when Trump stopped giving them money, they all screamed, oh my God, how can you stop giving Iran money? It's really like, weird. It's like how it works.
So we've been sharing our nuclear secrets with North Korea.
Yeah.
So one of the last points I would make is just this, the possibility of the Soleimani's, the ring, the very distinctive ring he wore, so that we're able to identify his destroyed corpse. A bit grim. Mm. Anyways, the biggest thing is a possible massive war with basically the US versus Iran. Now,
the Iranians have been threatening this for many, many years and nothing's happened.
Mm. Yeah. Well, there's a Cold War. It's not even all that cold, is it? But there's obviously an ongoing Cold War with them.
It's not even a Cold War. It's basically a sort of guerrilla proxy war.
Yeah, right. Yeah, proxy wars.
That's the right description. Okay, yeah. But the Iranians are clearly losing it.
Yeah.
And it's because they're clearly picking a fight with powers that are just far beyond what Iran is capable of. So it's pretty inevitable how this is going to go.
They're outclassed. They're outmatched.
By just orders of magnitude.
Yeah. So Hezbollah aren't able to contest the skies with Israel, right? They've got no fast jets.
Honestly,
there's no dogfights between Hezbollah fast jets and the Israeli Air Force.
It reminds me of Mithridates declaring war in Rome. It's like, you're not even on the same continent as the Romans. You know, you're never going to get to Rome. You're never going to win the war. You know, the best you could get is for them to just be like, oh, it's not worth the time. You know, just for them to wander off and do something else. You can't win this, you know, it's...
So the Israelis, for one example, the Israelis will use satellites just to be watching Lebanon the whole time, or Gaza, or wherever it is, wherever they want. Just watching it the whole time, and then they'll just relay things back in real time to unmanned drones, or actual fast jets, pinpoint stuff, and then when the Hezbollah are going to do a counter-strike, they're ready to strike that counter-strike. Yeah. Hezbollah can't win this in a military sense, right? They're just so...
The Arab way of war is old-fashioned, and it doesn't fit in the modern era.
And none of that is to be simping for Netanyahu, to be clear.
No, but
just
I mean,
saying the facts, right? It's just the facts.
It's just how it is.
Okay, so the very last thing I just want to say is that, again, the main worry is that Israel draws the US into some sort of big thing with Iran, and ever since the October 6th, or is it October 7th?
You know, October 7th.
October 7th. Mm. Ever since then, literally like that day or the next day, people were saying, oh, it's going to be World War III. I thought, you know, that's still a long way off. And I still think it's a long way off.
Absolutely,
I don't think it's inevitable, though. I mean,
that we do the same way that nothing is, yeah.
Well, I suppose so, yeah.
I
wasn't clear there. I think it's a possibility at some point in the future that in the end, it's the US Air Force is bombing Iran, or joint US Israeli Air Force doing hundreds of fast jet sorties into Iran and stuff. That's possible.
I get the feeling, though, that the Iranian regime realizes, because as I understand it, they're quite unpopular in Iran.
I believe so.
And people generally don't seem to support them. So I always wonder, are they afraid of engaging into a major conflict because they'll just find themselves ousted?
Maybe. They've got a police state, essentially, haven't they? Some type of police state. It's not a full-blown Stalinist 1950s thing, but...
It's also, it just seems to be deeply unpopular with the average person in Iran. So.
Yeah. Well, a lot of Iranians that I've spoke to that, you know, are fresh out of the country are quite westernised already.
Yeah.
It's quite surprising, really. I thought, okay. But then I suppose that before the revolution, they were Western aligned, weren't they?
Iran's one of the weird events of the 20th century, I would say, because the Iranians are the least likely people to become Islamic militants, you would think, you know, until the revolution. So it's just like, okay, that's weird.
So the Islamic revolution in Iran was only 1979.
Yeah.
So before that, they had the Shah, they had a king, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was, again, it wasn't, I don't think, all that popular.
Puppet.
I don't think it was all that popular among the Iranian people either. Well, he wasn't. But yeah, they were sort of Western aligned before the Islamic Revolution. Went full-blown Islamist. And now we're dealing with whatever we're dealing with. So just have to keep watching it. But I just hope Britain, NATO, or even the British Army doesn't ever, ever get involved in this. What is this desert feud? Thing.
Trying to get out of it.
Yeah, it's not in English interests or even British interests in any way, shape, or form. And I won't take a side. So anyway, that's that.
Okay. Can I have the mouse, please?
Of course. There you go.
So this is going to surprise everyone, but
Do you need to do a few?
They're going to steal it. Oh, yeah, sure. Sorry, I better do that. Windpill Seeker says, Bo borrowed your hat and looked like a proper Florida man with that MAGA hat on. You did. Roughneck says, to paraphrase Kanye, FEMA doesn't care about white people. Russian says, you can't use federal troops for a natural disaster. I guess the 101st Airborne is only for putting bayonets in the backs of... I have no idea what you're talking about there, Russian. But anyway, we'll leave that there. So anyway... it's not going to surprise anyone to know that the Democrats are planning on fortifying the 2024 presidential election. We'll be covering this live, by the way, on lowseas.com, so we'll watch the fix as it comes in, like we did last time, actually. Because it's just remarkable how, you know, the F graph, that it's going to be something like that, basically.
I think it's going to be different in its nature this time around, because I've seen...
I think it might fail.
Like, the mail-in ballots were down massively, which was their main advantage last time. And I think that what they're trying to rely on this time is just bussing in lots of illegals. And I think that's part of the reason why those Haitians were just dropped in a random Ohio town.
You know what? We'll get to that in a minute. But before we do, go and get Island Magazine. It's only going to be there for about a week or so left. And check out my article in particular, which is called The Lifting of the Veil, because I'm talking in it about how we're crossing a threshold. We have arrived in a new place where the scales are falling from everyone's eyes, and it's becoming deeply apparent that I'm right about this, frankly. So go and get it. It's really good. Because I'm not even joking. This is just the overt nature of the fortification is just so out in the open. Like, this is Merrick Garland, right? And as Carl Beck is probably, he's making it clear the Biden regime intends to cheat. Honestly, I don't know how you're supposed to take this if not.
The right to vote is still under attack. And that is why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. That is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements.
Right. That's fascinating, isn't it? So the drop boxes, they're just, you know, it's a box that's just standing there that anyone can access at any time and apparently put the ballots in. So anyone could interfere with that. Or the mail-in ballots. Okay. But again, there seems to be major questions given those 4 a.m. mail-in ballot drops. Oh, there's just nothing to question here. And the final one, which is just remarkable to me, voter ID. And now we've heard that this is racist and discriminatory because apparently they think that black people don't have IDs, which is obviously not true because everyone in America has an ID, basically. And it's just preposterous. So all you could come away with from this, and this was back in March, or you can reasonably come away from this site, right, so they want cheating. They want people who aren't registered to vote. They want there to be an insecure supply chain in between you casting your vote and it arriving where it's supposed to be, right? They want a series of failure points to be there, right? So this, if this was anything else in any other like setting, like if it was business or if it was, you know, whatever it is, you'd be like, right, you're setting up points of insecurity and failure on purpose, right? Okay, well, then what the purpose of the system is, what it does, you want to have corruption, you want to have some sort of
this is how republics die.
Yeah, this is like
this is how you kill republics.
There is no excuse for this whatsoever, and to frame it as like, oh well, it's racist or it's trying to stop people from voting, well, some people ought not to be voting, illegal aliens incidentally.
Where is he anyway? Kinshasa, what is that?
I don't know where he was.
Who cares? It doesn't matter.
So,
sorry. I was just saying one other thing.
Like, yeah.
When you look at late Republican Rome, the amount of voting corruption was again sort of completely out in the open.
Yeah.
Just literally going between the various... Yeah, going between the various voting blocks, literally with a bag of gold coins and handing them out in full sight of everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it's going on.
Yeah.
And you don't have a republic anymore. You don't have a democracy
anymore. That's what Merrick Garland here is... again, Attorney General, like, this is what he's doing. And so you've got Gavin Newsom, literally yesterday, signing into law, a law into California law to ban voter ID. So local governments in California are not allowed to ask for voter ID for people who go to vote. And this is in response to a ballot initiative that was approved by voters of Huntington Beach, where 53.4% of the residents voted to adopt a ballot measure that would require people to show ID. And so Gavin Newsom's like, not on my watch. Do you know how many illegals there are in California? Millions!
He should millions be tarred and feathered.
Yes,
well, this is the same sort of playbook that they've used for the Trump assassination. They create the conditions where the outcome which they want to happen can happen whilst having plausible deniability that, oh, it was just incompetence, oh, it was a mistake.
Yeah. No, this isn't a mistake.
Got enough separation. Of course it's not a mistake, but they can formally say, oh, you know, we messed up or something like that, if they had to, which I don't even think they will have to. But the way things are being set up here, they know that voting fraud and rigging elections is weighted towards their favour, because 100%. The kinds of people that will cheat will vote Democrat.
Yes.
And so they're creating those conditions, aren't
Liberally.
They?
And I mean, why would you sign a law to ban voter ID when more than half of the people in the county, in this particular city, are like, no, we're going to have voter ID just because we want to make sure our elections are secure. It's like, no, we're going to have insecure elections. And I'm doing this in response to you asking for secure elections.
It reminds me of something that Joe Biden's brother said privately, when one of Hunter Biden's business associates asked him about, aren't you worried that this is going to come back and bite you? And he's like, well, I've got plausible deniability. That's good enough. It's that same sort of thing going on here.
Yeah. And you ask, why would someone like Gavin Newsom do this? Well, because they're bought and paid for a puppet for someone else, something else. And they're not representing the interests of Californians anymore.
Yeah, no, what they're representing is the interests of the Democrat Party. Because I think the Democrats have... like Wile E. Coyote run off the cliff at this point, and they realize that if they don't keep running, then they're just going to plummet. And so they're like, okay, well, we've lost Americans by and large, you know, the broad sweep of the American public. We've got the single cat ladies, we've got like very minor, like, you know, LGBT communities, and we've got illegals. So we're gonna have to just leverage those as much as we can, because if we don't, we're just going to plummet. So, I mean, here's Arizona. 218,000 voters were wrongly marked as providing proof of citizenship due to, quote-unquote, an error. There's a news clip, but I won't play it just to save time.
We're watching the Republic die on its arse here.
200,000. Arizona's not a big state.
No.
That's
well, in terms of area, it's massive, but population.
But in terms of population, yeah.
7 million.
Yeah, just to make clear,
it's about
there would
million.
Be some so, fedora tipper out there that corrects
me. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
And so out of 7 million, having 200,000 voters who doubtless are going to end up voting for Joe Biden easily will swing something. It's like, okay, but you're deliberately entering into the process an element by which fraud is enabled. So you are committing fraud. That's the only reasonable assumption that I can make in this circumstance. If you don't want properly secured elections where people who are not allowed to vote are voting, then you want fraud. That's my opinion on this. And if you think that that's unfair, then we can get rid of these voters so we know that they won't be committing any fraud.
Well, it boggles my mind that they haven't moved towards paper ballots and showing ID the rest of Europe.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's an untested formula.
Like the rest of the Western world.
It works. Yeah. And the fact that America is the exception suggests to me that they're deliberately doing it.
Well, it's under the Biden-Harris administration. I wonder if somehow Trump does win next time, he'll sort of start putting things like that in place to try and prevent it going forward. But of course, Biden and Harris weren't going to do those things during their 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have cheap. This Nevada state senator is pointing out that, hang on a second, 130,000 people voted illegally in Nevada. Oh, that's election swinging as well. Like, again, these are massive numbers. These are colossal. And so you got states like Alabama are like, yeah, good point. Maybe we should make sure illegals are purged from the rolls, because obviously you don't want illegals voting in your state. And so the Department of Justice was like, right, we're going to sue you for that. So, sorry, what?
And again, that's meritless garland.
Yes, it is indeed. But as you can see, it's just like
an enemy of the nation.
Yeah, yeah. No, garland. No. So you are going to sue Alabama for removing non-citizens who ought not to be voting from the voting rolls. Right. You want to cheat. I don't know how else you can describe it. That is a declaration that we are going to use these to fix the election. I don't know what else it would be. Like, I'm just like, okay, it's out in the open. It's completely out in the open. They're like, no, we want to cheat. That's why we want these insecure elections. That's why we want illegals on the voter rolls. And if you take them off, we're going to use force of law against you to get them back on. It's like, that is bonkers. That is absolutely bonkers. Right. And then you get some brilliant ones here. So this is from the Ohio Secretary of State. This is amazing, right? Frank LaRose, the Secretary of State for Ohio, announced that the Election Integrity Unit has issued a warning to 88 county boards after an investigation uncovered use of illegal voter registration forms by a government agency. Sorry. And well, just warning. No, there's a person behind that. There's a group of people behind that. They are all Democrat partisans, by the way. I guarantee it. You know, and if they think I'm wrong, they can come out and sue me and we'll have a bit of an investigation into this. But, like, is someone not going to be punished for that? Like, is someone not going to be punished for this? It's like, no.
Almost certainly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No. They're just creating illegal voter registration forms so non-citizens can vote in the elections. And we're just going to be like, oh, well, just be careful about that. What do you mean, be careful? Someone's committed a crime there. Like, a bunch of them need to go to jail for this. A
giant heinous crime.
Yeah, a massive, yeah, stealing the Republic crime.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is massive.
Subverting the state.
And as you said earlier, Josh, the office's Election Integrity Unit concluded the investigation of the origins of the illegal voter registration form because it was translated into the Haitian Creole language.
Of course.
So we're going to dump tens of thousands of illegal Haitians in this state, and then we're going to give them it in their own language so they can vote Democrat.
Have they got the Democrats explaining this is the box you need to tick to get free stuff?
I don't doubt that they do. It's just unbelievable how blatant and out in the open it is. And again, this is from the Secretary of State for Ohio. Like, this, if this was some like random crazy conspiratard website, I'd be like, okay, well, calm down. You know, it's, you know, I need a bit more proof. Okay, I don't know what else we're going to say to this. The memo concludes with a notice of ongoing investigations into evidence of a pattern of fraudulent voter registration activity in multiple counties under the paid employment of a group called Black Fork Strategies. I wonder who they might be. I've never heard of them before either. I didn't have time to look into them before.
If you mishear it, it might sound a bit like BlackRock, but that would be mistaken, wouldn't it?
But okay, so you've got a group that you've identified that are creating fraudulent voter registration forms. Arrest them. Yeah. Arrest them. They have committed a crime. Arrest them. What, you've got police. You, like, go and arrest them. Arrest them now. And then, you know, say, okay, well, we've got this evidence. You're being charged. And now we're going to go through the process. It's crazy. So anyway, this is everywhere, right? Here's a Wisconsin.
Again, it would be up to Merrick Garland to prosecute him, so it's just not going to happen.
It would. This Wisconsin loophole will allow 150,000 people to vote without showing photo ID, because why not? Why would you? Why wouldn't you? Like, it's genuinely crazy to me how this is so in your face. As an if you're an American, I'd be like, well, okay, so is this over then? This is just over, right? Like, we're not. Are we just going through the motions? It's the fiction of the Republic now, as we've clearly transmogrified into the Imperial period, or what? You know, this is genuinely like the fall of Rome here. It's like, okay. Well, they're just going to cheat.
I'm going to be very interested to see the rate of ammunition sales leading up to the election, because I imagine lots of Americans are going to see what's coming. Based on a lot of this.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've got loads here. So here's back in 2022, at the time, conservative majority of the Wisconsin Supreme Court were like, you know what, these ballot boxes are a bit of a sus thing. They're a bit weird because actually they can be tampered with, and that's not good. We should probably have it so our elections can't just be tampered with. And so they banned them, and they were like, good idea. And then in 2024, their Supreme Court went liberal again, so they decided, Josh, you're knocking this. So
oh, sorry.
Killing this. They decided that they'd overturn that ruling and bring the ballot boxes back. It's like, okay, so the protective measures that were taken by the conservatives have been overthrown on purpose by the liberals consciously. It's like, right, okay. All right, I get it. You're cheating. You're just cheating. It's cheating all over America, apparently. Right? And just as a quick thing, drop boxes aren't a universal thing in American elections or anything like that. Right? As you can see here, these states all ban the drop boxes because, of course, they're suspect. They can be interfered with. They can be tampered with. Of course you would want these banned. And so the fact that it's like, okay, no, we're just going to bring them back. It's like, oh, okay, all right. You know, very, very convincing. Then you have, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Again, it's one of those things where it's like, if I were going to cheat, what would I do? So she's brought in this controversial recount law. So if someone thinks that there has been a mistake, an honest-to-goodness mistake, Governor, in the election, she signed this law that means that it won't be recounted if the allegation of the mistake isn't sufficient to sway the election. Who decides that?
Yeah, right.
Who makes that? Is it Gretchen Whitmer who makes that decision?
Is it?
Well, of course it is. She's
right,
the governor.
Right.
Of course, who else could it be? Right? She's just going to like, no, I don't think it does. And that's literally what it comes to, right? Only alleged errors that could merit a recount when the alleged errors could potentially change the election results. And it'll also do a lot of other small things like increase the deposit for filing a petition recount, modify various guidelines for clerks, and change sentencing guidelines for election law violations. Basically, a series of small measures just make it more difficult to get a recount. To just make it so that it's unlikely to happen. And Senator Stephanie Chang from Detroit said, today, with the signing of the common sense recount law reforms, hey, this is just common sense, we're strengthening our democracy.
Their democracy. Sure. Right?
And ensuring that we reach the most accurate count of the ballots possible. These laws achieve critical goals of protecting the security of every vote, modernizing our recount process, and uplifting the voices of Michigan voters. With rhetoric like that, I can't help but feel she's just lying to our faces.
It's just pure doublethink, the opposite of what's being said, lying, just purely.
Everything. It's just, yeah. and they're just doing it all out in the open, and they're doing it, you know, literally in the last like 6 months. So the election's coming quick. Crank up the machine. We're going to have to start printing ballots. We're going to have to start fixing this. They're definitely going to try.
It seems to me that at this stage, the Democratic Party as an organ, as an organisation, is some sort of parasitic oligarchy sitting on top of the United States of America.
Yes. Obviously.
Perverting everything.
Correct.
In order to maintain power.
There's nothing that they won't lie about. There's no fraud they won't commit. And there's no cheating that isn't justified in order to maintain themselves. That's correct. Just in case you were wondering. And the thing is, they've got good reason to be very worried, actually, because, of course, Donald Trump's like, no, I'm going to get Elon Musk into the federal government. Look at what he did with Twitter. He cut 2/3 of the staff and it works better than ever. So, you know, imagine how much he's going to do to the government. And then you got responses like this to that. It was like, Elon's going to fire tens of thousands of middle-class Americans for sport. Brilliant. I hope he films it. That's I hope a we sport. Can watch it live.
I would like to be a professional at this sport, to be honest.
Pay-per-view. I'd love to watch it. Yes, Luke, we're going to fire them all. You know, the federal government, it could be tiny. And so you can see why they're like, yeah, we're going to have to fix this. You know, because, I mean, it's just
that he complains when someone gets rid of a parasite as well.
Yeah. And just, you know, you've noticed all the tech billionaires coming out for Trump recently, right? And that's because you've got people like Peter Thiel. And I'll just play this to end this bit. Because they know what's going on. They can all see it. Elon Musk has been posting about this nonstop as well. But this is great from Peter Thiel.
If it is going to be close, by the way, if it's like going to be a razor-thin close election, then I'm pretty sure Kamala will win because they will cheat, they will fortify it, they will steal the ballots, and so you know if we can
base Peter Thiel.
It's weird people are laughing.
I don't want to be involved. In the event that it's not close, I don't need to be involved. And so that's sort of a straightforward analysis right there.
Great jumping off point. How much cheating on a percentage basis do you think happens every year? How much, and do you think Trump actually won the last time?
You need to be careful with the verbs. So, you know, cheating, stealing, that implies something happened dark of night.
Massaging.
I think the verb you're allowed to use is fortify.
We don't want to get canceled election. On YouTube.
Ballot harvesting. I mean, it was, you know, it's all sort of, there were all these rule changes. It was sort of done in plain daylight. And I think our elections are not perfectly clean. Otherwise, we could examine it. We could have a vigorous debate about it.
Well, what would you change then? What should change? Because we all want everybody's votes to count. We want it to be clean. I'm talking about the audience here.
I don't know. At a minimum, you'd try to run elections the same way you do it in every other Western democracy. You have one day voting. You have practically no absentee ballots. It's one day where everything happens. It's not this two-month elongated process.
So it's not that the tech billionaires don't get it. They do get it. And again, Elon Musk, you can go to his Twitter feed and just find him posting stuff about voter ID and Democrats being frauds and all this sort of stuff. So they completely get it. They know that we know. Everyone knows. The Democrats, as Thiel said, they're not trying to hide it. It's just they're just making all these changes out in the open. It's all public. You can get all of the news results. It's just all there. They're going to try and cheat. They're already trying to cheat, and they definitely cheat in 2020.
My only hope is that unless they go absolutely ballistic with the scale of the cheating, Trump should win anyway, because when you sort of look at the when you drill down into the state by state thing, of course the Democrats are likely to still win both coasts. But a lot of the other sort of swing states, places like Ohio, Michigan, even places like Arizona and Nevada and all these places, it seems that Trump, if it's even remotely clean, Trump should sweep them with ease.
Yes.
In other words, what I'm trying to say is they would have to cheat way bigger than last time to beat Trump this time, I feel like.
Yeah.
Not that it's not beyond them. It's totally not beyond them, is it?
No,
they're going to try and do that. But.
So basically, our Republican friends in America, you've got to be on your guard. You've got to be watching all of this stuff. You've got to make sure that you are doing whatever you can to look out for them cheating. Because, I mean, in 2020, everyone was like, oh my God, these are weird things going on. No, now you know. Right? Yeah. No, it's all out in the open. They're cheats. They're going to try and steal it. They are doing it already. So when you see it, make sure you bring it to a halt. Just stand there. I'm not going to let you do this. You know, you've got to intervene. You can't just allow them to be like, we're going to board up the things and you're just not coming in. No, okay, the vote's over. It's over at that point. That's where it's over, you know. So anyway, just be prepared. That's all I'm saying.
I would hope that someone with a load of money, like Trump himself or Elon or Thiel or someone that's got billions and billions, could actually fund some sort of third-party groups to try and prevent that thing like we saw last time where we're going to board up the windows for a couple of hours and things.
Don't worry about it.
You know. To physically prevent that sort of thing from going on again. Even if it's like hundreds or even thousands of these small groups all over America doing that on that night. That would be worth it. That'd be money well spent, wouldn't it?
The Republicans can't let this go. That's all it is. Anyway, Win Pill Seeker says, Democrats lost the Civil War. Democrats segregated us. Democrats forcefully sterilized us under Buck and Bell till 1977. Democrats are racist. All of those who vote for them are like Sam Jackson in Django. Captain M says, I understand you guys don't know this. However, shenanigans with our elections is very common in American history. I imagine, I hope Bo has heard of Tammany Hall and Boss Tweed. I'm not saying they haven't, you know, the American elections have been perfect for all time. But it's the scale of this now. It's everywhere that the Democrats are in control. They're cheating. You know, they're just doing it.
So. Tammany Hall in New York was famously a byword in the 19th century, early 20th century as well, for corruption.
Yeah.
I've spoken a couple of times about the 1960 election when Jack Kennedy beat Nixon.
Yeah.
In 1960.
What about George Bush?
Jeb Bush in Florida.
Yeah.
2000. Yeah, it's not new. It just seems the scale of it now.
Exactly. But these are like isolated places where it's like, oh, that's a corrupt thing. But no, this is just everywhere. This is, and the laws are being changed. No, we're just going to have illegals voting and it's totally fine. It's like, oh my God, you know, this is just... Anyway, Cranky Texan for $50, thanks man, says, for a primer on the infrastructure behind the fortification of elections, watch the Rumble video posted on Turning Point Action Channel titled Understanding Arabella and Democracy Alliance. You could also just read the Time magazine, How We Stole the Election. Mm-hmm. But, right.
No, thank you.
About this post, time for a tech question. In a heat pump system, you're just moving heat energy from one place to another. You're not generating the heat per se with a resistive electric or burning a fuel. In a closed loop, you start with a compressed medium that expels energy into your home. As this medium cools down, it goes through an expansion valve. When it expands, it cools much like a can of compressed air getting cooler when used. After this, the medium should now be much colder than the surrounding thermal exchange material. It picks up energy and goes around to the compressor where it starts all over again.
That's a fascinating explanation, but I think the real notable thing about this, I can't see it. Samson, can we get back to the beginning of the video so we can see the tweet? Yeah, right. This is just an incredible example of the decline for me.
Yeah, like, it's dumb.
Yeah. Did you know the heat pump is 3 times more efficient than the gas boiler, meaning it generates 3 times more energy than it consumes?
Wow, I didn't think that was possible in physics.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. You know, it's the first law of thermodynamics.
Yeah.
I posted about this on Twitter because the memes have been incredible. And someone just posted Starmer leaning over to Ed Miliband and we're like, right, we're repealing the first law of thermodynamics. You know, the Department for Energy... You'd think it'd be staffed by people who have degrees in things like physics and things like, you know, you'd think there'd be people who knew about this subject.
Doctors and professors.
Like, I don't even have an A-level in physics. You know, I've got a GCSE in physics. And I know that doesn't happen. You know, I know that doesn't happen. So the fact that this can go through any checking and verifying, this is the official government account that's posting this illiterate nonsense, is just evidence of the decline. It's like, no, well, just idiots.
The other thing I was going to say, one, just that whoever wrote that obviously doesn't know what they're talking about. But then two, there was no sort of quality control, no checking before they tweeted it out.
No.
Could say this is government misinformation.
So an idiot with no oversight. Yeah, right. An idiot, zero oversight. Boom, done. We get this.
It's just...
Okay.
Pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. Embarrassing.
In yogic tradition, gazing into the fire is believed to clear your mind, clear your soul, and cleanse your sight. It is also believed, with no science backing, to decalcify your pineal gland. With science backing, it's been proven to regulate your circadian rhythms.
It's just quite relaxing, really.
One thing that I have noticed, whenever you have an open fire, particularly if you're camping, it is so amazingly relaxing. You can just sit and watch the fire and just enjoy the experience of being there. And it's one of those things where it sounds like you're sort of over-egging it a little bit, but it is really quite excellent.
And even the embers are mesmerizing quite often. Mm. Yeah, and it's quite a low goal. But I would like a home one day that has got a full chimney and an open fire. So I can, again, spend the evening sort of staring into the fire. Yeah, it's great. It's truly
mesmerizing. That's why you need to stay signed up to Lotus Eaters so Bo can afford his fire.
Yes,
noble
please,
goal.
Yeah, right.
There's nothing wrong with it.
One of my favourite things to do is take one of the rocks that you surround the fire with that's been warmed by the fire and put it in like my tent, and it warms up the tent on a sort of cold autumn or winter's night. and it's almost like you've got heating in there.
Does it not melt through the bottom of the tin? How do you do that? Do you have to
put it in my mess tin?
Oh, okay. Oh, just a small one. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, good idea, actually.
Mm.
Do they not have alligators in Texas?
I don't think so.
Right. So I'd be worried about alligators.
Yeah. I mean, it looks idyllic.
No, but it looks lovely.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, yeah, it looks lovely.
Every video comment you upload just reminds me of how miserable I am in Swindon.
Yeah, yeah. There are some nice open places in Britain. There are some.
There are loads. You just have to like go into the countryside. And you live in the town centre, which obviously...
But there's something grand about Texas, though, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it's even in the
it's huge and flat,
the wide open spaces, sort of the endless skies and stuff.
I can certainly see.
Since y'all seem interested, I thought I'd give you a quick guide on how to restore a car. Step one: break into small, convenient, easy to digest jobs like this paint bubbling because of the brake fluid. Step two: it wasn't the brake fluid. Step three: very carefully use your angle grinder to cut out small chunks of metal where the rust stops. Step four: uncover unearthly horrors beyond your comprehension. Step four. Step five: fix it. And it's just that easy. If you just follow these simple steps, you too can waste all of your time and money restoring worthless garbage that nobody but you cares about. Keep your stick in the ice.
Yeah, but it looks really satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah.
To have done something.
It's a real hobby, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Unibomber, quickly, almost.
Yes. Yeah, Ted Kaczynski, yeah.
Right. I can't really do things that I can't weld. I've never welded anything in my life. I wouldn't know where to start if you gave me all the...
I'm not in any way trained.
So, I mean, or of people that can do stuff like that.
I've done it once, and they said it looked like it had been done by a chimpanzee. So, there you go.
I think there's a real
more to it. Yeah, there is more to it than you think.
In terms of immigration, consider that Britain would be similar to Hawaii because of its status as an island nation. It isn't like you're going to grow more space for these people to move into. Meanwhile, in the U.S., we have so much landmass that we can absorb a lot of additional people. And the U.S. did have a very robust legal immigration system that didn't just allow for people to enter and then become wards of the state, a.k.a. parasites. Unfortunately, decades of globalist noncery and leftist policies have led us to where we are now, desperately hoping the right grows some fucking balls.
Yeah, no, it's just nothing to disagree with there, is there?
Was that the guy that makes the... the bow release things, or was that actual brass knucks he had at the bottom of that video?
I think those were brass knuckles. Brass knuckles. Yeah.
Right, okay, cool. He's completely correct. Like the way we handle immigration is just crazy and irresponsible.
Yeah.
And I just despair. Man.
It's a crime without precedent.
Yeah.
Absolutely without precedent. Yeah. Cannibal Corpse. It's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
Just a friendly reminder, go watch your favourite band. Music is meant to be enjoyed live. Make the effort, go to shows. Good point.
I still see a lot of live music.
I'll pass, I hate going to gigs. They're crap. I've been to one gig ever where it wasn't terrible. The music itself wasn't terrible. I went to see the Manic Street Preachers once and it sounded like the album. Every other live gig I've ever seen, it was like, ugh. They're not playing it right. Did they even play it originally? Like the singer's not singing it properly or whatever.
I think with some bands, the actual sound system you get in a live gig is the best you can possibly get. Some live gigs, in my experience at least, cannot be captured on a studio album. They're just that good. So those are the experiences you want. Like some of my most fond memories in my life are going to gigs where that happens and it's wonderful.
I think maybe it's just because I'm sort of actually middle-aged now, where the idea of going to a gig, spending a bit of money on going and standing there for ages with loads of smelly strangers, it's like, yeah, no thanks.
I went to a music festival last summer and I was just like, am I a bit too old for this? I sort of had like a mid-life crisis. It's like, but lots of people are older than me here, but also... I'm not enjoying this nearly as much as I used to.
Last time I went to Reading Festival in my early 30s, it was like, this is horrible. I'm hating this.
I went to the Reading Festival a bunch of times when I was in it, in my early 20s, and I had a great time. Last time I went to a gig was probably about a decade ago, and it just hurt my ears. And I was just like...
I've realized...
No, I was only 35. I was just like, I'm not enjoying this.
I think you've got to be able to drink every day to be able to enjoy it to its fullest.
But then,
my body can't take that anymore.
Yeah, I did when I went to Reading, but I've just got no... It just doesn't appeal anymore. You know, I'm just too old. Anyway, Jimbo says, good news, lads. I started a new job in December.
Congratulations.
A new job in December. Oh, right, last December. And it's got promoted already. Oh, well done.
Nice.
Well done. Rewarded myself with Islander Volume 2 and 3 shirts from your merch store. Thank you very much.
Sweet.
I can't pronounce that name, says... I can pronounce that. Questions, Carl. Do you actually own 5 cats, like you said in the interview with Ed Dutton? Yes.
Do you?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I know you had cats. I didn't know it was 5.
Yeah.
That's like Egyptian level.
Yeah, I know. It's not my choice. I didn't want a single one of them, right? And I would have the same argument with my wife. I'd be like, look, we're not getting another cat. We're not getting a cat. We're not getting a cat. And then she'd just bring home a tiny kitten, right? And I'm like, ah. And then she'd put it on my lap. And it'd be like cold and afraid. And it'd be like purring on your lap. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Throw it out? You know, so obviously it got to stay.
Fetch the burlap bag.
Exactly. What's I gonna do? Yeah. You know? And so I would just be in a bad mood with her for about a week, and she was just like, "Yeah, it's an acceptable price to pay." And then another one, and another one, and now we've got 5 fucking cats, and one of them got pregnant because it wasn't done, and so she had a couple of babies. We gave one away, but we kept one, and so now we've just got 5 cats, and I didn't consent to any of them, and I can't get rid of them, and they're adorable, so it's fine, but it's just like, for God's sake. You know, I didn't want 5 cats. On the plus side, though, if you're going to get a pet, a cat is one of the least impactful to get.
Mm.
You know, most of the time they take care of themselves. You just have to put food down and clear up bird guts. So, yes, I own 5 cats. Fuzzy Toaster says, I think the office should stop shaving and see how amazing the beards and moustaches can get by 2025. You should look like a council of wise men.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad idea. But my wife really hates it when I don't trim my beard because, you know, she's got to deal with like this face of fur coming near her.
I'd look like Fu Manchu anyway. Like, it all grows here. So I'd have like a big dangling.
I do like the idea though. I think we should do it. I think that's a good idea.
I'd start talking about the Three Kingdoms period of Chinese history a lot more if I did that.
I'd like that. We'll do an epoch series.
Yeah. Someone online says they'll only care about the states that got hit as far as they can use them for climate change initiatives. That's true. Baron von War Kiwi says, Bo, in case you're wondering why these people don't just move away from hurricane and tornado regions, remember that these are some of the poorest states in the Union and they can't afford to leave.
Plus, I know it's easier said than done. It's the most glib thing in the world. Just move from where your forefathers have always lived. Yeah. Just move, bro.
I get a lot of Americans saying that to me, and I'm like, I don't want to, even if it sucks.
Yeah, no, I know it's kind of a crappy thing to say, actually. Yeah. Just move. But yeah, if you live at the bottom of a volcano, though, if you live in the middle of Tornado Alley that every 3, 4, 5 years is going to get hit by a force 4 tornado or whatever, bear it in mind as a possibility. But yeah, if you can't afford it, what are you going to do?
I can see why some Native American tribes thought America was a cursed land, because you've got hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, earthquakes. Just, no matter where you go, there's like I figured it out. There's a narrow window where no natural disasters occur. I'm not going to tell anyone where they are.
Somewhere like Vermont would probably be quite clement, quite nice. Don't know why I've got that in my mind. Vermont is a paradise.
Yeah, but it's Bernie Sanders is their senator, isn't he?
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So, good luck.
Pass. That's a hard pass on Vermont.
Super chat here.
Yeah, yeah. How am I not covered in cat hair? I don't know, actually. I actually don't know. I don't seem to be, though.
I know.
I've never noticed.
When my cat was still alive, I was still finding cat hairs on my clothes, even after washing them, everything possible. Yep. Just ginger hairs everywhere.
Anyway, the palest son of Yakub says, Georgia and North Carolina are swing states. Biden is either that incompetent or is secretly trying to screw over Harris. I think it's incompetence, obviously.
Mm. And indifference.
Yeah.
Does not care what happens to those people or what their plight is.
Yeah, I think that's another part. Just doesn't see them as part of his own constituency, right? You know, if it was happening in, like, you know, Detroit or something, he'd be like, oh, we're saving the black community, blah, 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 blah. But you know, it's a bunch of poor white people in the rural areas of America. I mean, I saw leftists on Twitter being like, oh, thank God some racists have died. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's always one of those, isn't there? Whenever someone dies, someone's glad about it these days.
Charlie says, to be fair to Israel, the fact they took out almost the entirety of the Hezbollah leadership so quickly and comprehensively is something that would be studied for years to come as how to effectively take out a terrorist organization. Yeah, I mean, you know, whether you like Israel or not, you can't deny that it was skillful what they did.
Yeah. A few people said when I was watching stuff and reading stuff about it that that would have taken years of planning.
Oh, yeah.
They were sort of sitting on information for years and years. Yeah, it's quite remarkable. It is remarkable.
Yeah, genuinely. Mr. Flibble says, for as long as I've been aware of the world in general, various terrorist groups have been lobbing rockets into Israel in the name of peace. Actually doing something about it is overdue, to be honest. Lancelot says, if I wasn't upset with my hometown of Melbourne enough, they've had rallies mourning the death of a Hezbollah terrorist leader. There's no talking to these people. I'm going to take my Guinevere and find a Tintagel up north, far away from this grim, frostbitten madhouse. Melbourne can't be that cold.
What, Melbourne, Australia?
Yeah.
Blimey, surely not.
It would be, but...
Can't be that cold. Well, I mean, if he's going north where it's warm, it must be in Australia.
You know, that's why the argument or the angle of shouldn't celebrate any sort of Israeli wins on principle. It's like, no. If they're taking out monsters...
Yeah, I'm not against it.
Then, yeah, good.
Yeah, good. I don't...
Could also
fine
be
with me.
Melbourne, Derbyshire... Potentially.
Unlikely to go north to find warmer weather, though.
Yeah,
that's true.
Derek says, not going to lie, the exploding pages are hilarious, only because that one time that Looney Tunes antics become reality.
Mm.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
They've done that sort of thing loads of times. Like, they will put an explosive in someone's telephone. Back in the 70s, there was one guy, I can't remember exactly who it was, but they'd broken into his house and put a load of explosive under his telephone. And then rang him up, and when he picked up, hello, they detonate.
It's like
so they've got past in.
It reminds me of if 4chan had like a terror cell division, like they would just troll people with. It's like, oh, you've got these old-fashioned pages. What if they were to blow up? Oh, you're gonna accept a phone call? What
it
if?
Is a bit mimetic, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Mason says, so it turns out Iran was a complete paper tiger. I wonder if the same will be said of China. I don't know. And Big Ed says, it should also be noted that port workers' strike starts today in the US. I'm not sure if the Dems will be able to fortify their way out of skyrocketed prices if it goes long. Right, I didn't realise that a port strike was happening.
Might be doing a segment. Stelios was making some noise about doing a segment about that tomorrow. So maybe, right. Nothing, not promising anything, but maybe...
Maybe something then.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the point is, they're going to steal it. They're going to try and steal it. Omar says, one main difference is the shift in attitude as reaction to rhetoric. They called people racist for so many years that many are unironically embracing it. They spent so long calling concerned patriots insurrectionists. They better be more careful this time around. Besides, if the punishment for an unarmed tour is the same as a violent insurrection, what do people have to lose? This is a fair point, to be honest. Monkey Smoke says, representative democracy, they think they're too clever. Thane Scotty says, never forget the last time when there was one of the audits of the ballots. More ballots arrived during the audit. All Biden. All perfectly printed. Not a crease among them. I tell you what, that was... The 4 a.m. ballot dumps, just like, come on. Come on, are you going to look us in the eyes and be like, yeah, they're all Biden, by the way. 100% Biden. There's 130 of them. 130,000 of them. They're perfectly pristine. On
I think there were
freshly printed.
There was just like a handful that were Trump, just so they had the deniability aspect.
Just, well, no, there were some where it was 100% Biden. It was just like, come on, you know. Oh, it's just woo, like, so convenient. Anyway, he says, I know this because leftists online boasted about it and claimed it was self-owned. They didn't realize that it was an audit. It's not the same as a recount, and this is evidence for, not a refutation of, Trump's claims about the lack of election integrity. Well, I mean, they seem to just be openly at this point being like, yeah, we want election insecure elections. It's just what
I think. If America does get over this, though, it will be good for America to get all of this so out in the forefront and flagrantly obvious, because the result will be, you'll be able to mitigate against all of this, hopefully. I'm trying to be optimistic for once. I'm not used to it.
It's not. I tell you what, I am worried, though. I am worried that if it's not a Trump landslide, then Kamala wins. I mean, God.
Another 5 years of Democrat control would be a disaster for the world.
But if it was someone like Gavin Newsom, probably not too bad, because Newsom seems competent, even if he is evil. But Kamala Harris is not competent. That's the thing. She's evil and incompetent. You know, so... Anyway, Mason says, I don't believe the fortification boxes was of illegal fake ballots. I believe the Dems loosened the laws around voting, then used the Democratic machine to ballot harvest a bunch of low-propensity voters' ballots. It was technically legal. I'm sure there was some of that. I'm sure there was a bunch of that. But I think they also just printed a bunch of fake ones because there were loads that were just that had one vote on it for Biden, but nothing down ballot. And that's really unusual because, of course, if you're there, I'll just take them all, right? And so to have nothing on the down ballot is very peculiar. And you, I mean, why didn't you fix it? I mean, why didn't you?
I think there was a full spectrum of cheating, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think I really think so.
Why put all your eggs into one basket?
Exactly. Yeah, there's full spectrum dominance and cheating in elections. Kevin says the Department of Justice is also trying to sue states for trying to remove dead voters from the voter list. Well, yeah, we got to it. And the thing as well, right? Like, I've had conversations with friends of mine, and it's like, oh, well, do you really think they're cheating? It's like, do you think they're the kind of people who wouldn't cheat?
Yeah.
I mean, just ask yourself, do you think they wouldn't cheat? Of course they'd cheat.
So how naive have they got to be to...
Of course they would cheat.
Some people are still so naive.
Yeah.
I remember speaking to someone not too long ago about the idea... Well, anyway, I won't bother going into it, but some people just... Like, it's as if they would start a war over oil and claim they're not doing that. Yeah, of course they would. As if they would cheat at a general election. Like, oh, you're so cynical. No, you're naive.
Yeah.
You're naive.
Yeah. No, I'm sure California is just really deep blue, bro.
Yeah.
I'm sure they just love Democrat rule in California, bro.
Mm.
You know, come on. Anyway.
That everything?
That is.
Okay. So thank you very much for watching. Make sure to tune into our roundtable. That is about the Tories outflanking reform in the UK and what that means for our politics. That's going to be in half an hour. And make sure to tune in same time tomorrow. Thank you for watching and goodbye.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.